back in LA after 3 weeks in chilly England. Imagine my disappointment and frustration as I stepped outside the airport here and needed to put my coat back on. This is not the weather I signed up for when I moved to LA 19 years ago. One of my best buddies here in LA has been the fabulous and funny Tracy Ullman. We played tennis twice a week for 14 years and spent at least 10 Thanksgivings together. I think of her more as Mabel and Johnny's mum and the devoted wife of Alan McEwen for almost 30 years, until Alan died 4 years ago and she started spending more time in London. Tracy's kept busy the only way she knows how, by acting, producing and writing groundbreaking television. Here's Tracy Ullman chatting about tennis, comedy, acting, plastic surgery and much more. Put the kettle on, Tiago.
We simply must applaud them, the Chad Podcast with Claire Borden, Keir Hall and Chad Hall.
Tracy Ullman, thank you for chatting with me.
Okay, Claire.
I've never interviewed anyone in my pyjamas before, but the great thing about podcasts is, and radio is you... It doesn't matter what you look like, but no. You've still gone to a lot of trouble. You've done your nails, you put your face
on. Yeah, I was going to stay in my pyjamas, but...
Well, standards.
Yeah, then I know standards, yeah.
And here we are in London.
Yes.
I know you from America, of course, where mm-hmm. you were... I think I'm right in saying that you were the first Brit to go over to America and make it big. Is that true?
I think I did, for a lady to do a comedy show, I think in that sense... TV.
Yeah.
And an English girl in a comedy show, I guess. Yeah, there's been many English actors and actresses gone to America. So I guess that was unusual.
But in
that
TV?
Way. Television,
certainly,
yeah.
Certainly, you were the. And many followed you. And I think it's forgetting what the huge achievements that you've made. I don't know how important awards are to you, but Emmys, you've got 8 of them. You've got BAFTAs, Golden Globes. Do they mean a lot to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was lovely. They're lovely, you know, when you're getting them and it's part of the achievement. And I think why I did particularly well as an English girl going to America was that my husband, who I married, who was English, lived there already. I think many people try and go to America and, you know, from your own experience, you've got to commit to being somewhere and you can't just go there and stay there for 3 weeks and hope to get a job, and you've got to understand the culture. And I got married there in 83 and I didn't do a show, like a show with James Brooks till 87, you know. So I lived there. I knew the system. I had a baby there. I committed to living there. And
it's
I don't think you can just
that.
Go over there no. and impersonate it. And a lot of people go there and make fun and just think they could do an American accent, just take the piss out of everybody. You know, and it's, you have to, you know, and the guy that, you know, James L. Brooks, who I did that television show with, you know, the year before when I was pregnant, he just said, you must understand the culture you're about to work in. Go and watch television shows that, you know, you don't know of that I knew growing up. And so I remember him giving me this homework, Claire, which I looked back and was invaluable. I used to go to that Museum of Television and Radio in New York back then. And I used to watch all the shows in the 50s and 60s
like
and 70s. Carol Burnett, Saturday Night Live, Your Show of Shows, which was written in the 50s by Neil Simon and Woody Allen and, you know, Sid Caesar and Imogen Coker and all that fundamental stuff. I realised that there'd been a lot more opportunity for women in America earlier. You know, women read the news, you know, presented TV shows much earlier than in England. Do you remember when Angela Rippon in 1977 or something was the first female newsreader? So I really had a good grounding. I think I gave myself much more of a chance of being successful in America. Obviously got lucky to have James L. Brooks on to a show with me. So it's a lot to do with that and committing to somewhere and understanding the culture.
And you like the culture, you like America, you like Americans.
Yeah, I do. It's a fantastic... I became an American as well. I'm still a Brit, but yeah, I do. I mean, there's a lot of periphery stuff and with anything, you know, you have to... There's great people and there's that... Mm. You know, it drives me crazy when people in England just think Americans are... like Donald Trump. Or that
are
it's
you a
everybody's
fan of his?
No, not at all. That people are, everyone's face lives. You know, when people go to America and make documentaries about people with dogs with gold painted toenails and who sit in jacuzzis and have facelifts, and then everyone in England goes, oh, it's terrible over there, isn't it? You go, no. I've heard a lot of people with working people who are pretty normal, and you know.
is one of. you have a natural beauty. I believe that you have. Oops. Yes, you are. I don't mean this really a handsome one. You're very striking. I mean, you've got magnificent hair. You're always made, you know, wear your lipstick. You make an effort. But because you use your facial muscles so much, is that one the main reason that you would never do Botox or have a facelift? Because you wouldn't be able to do your character?
I don't knock anyone who wants to do it, but it wouldn't work for me. I spot it immediately on anybody because I study faces. And no, I don't have that kind of face that needs it, probably, no. Or I don't want it, and I just couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear making appointments to go and have needles put in my face and all that bollocks. Can you imagine having the time or the...
Oh, no.
Oh, it's, I don't even dye my hair. I mean, I'm just one
yes,
of those
you're
people.
Going grey naturally.
I just can't stand all that titivation. I think you've got girl dignity. And there's nothing worse than women who are 60 who still think they're trying to look 37 all the time. I mean, just, you know, spending a lot more time in Europe again, as I have been the last few years... You know, I just went to Paris for the weekend. You think, yeah, that's how to grow old with dignity. You know what I mean? There's a sort of older European woman look that I still really aspire to. I like that.
I think you've got it. You've got a French look about you, I think.
I'm very, Well, you know, look at you. You look bloody gorgeous. You don't get messed up with any of that stuff.
No, but that's because I can't afford it.
No, but if you could, you wouldn't do it.
I hope I wouldn't. Maybe just a little bit of neck.
Yeah,
a bit of gel.
Now we're talking. Yeah. I wouldn't mind. That might look good. A little one of those lifting your jowl.
We could
in
get
10 years.
For one. Two for the price of one.
Two for the price Group of one. If anyone's listening that can offer us a two for the price of one on a jaw.
You go first. Make sure.
You go.
So there you were. Living in LA, coming back here, but your career was over there. You had all these awards. I have to refer to the fact, because it was huge. You lost your darling husband,
four years ago.
And it was a conscious choice, I think, to move from there. He died there. Mm. And you and your fabulous kids, Mabel and Johnny, were with him. That was a big deal. It was huge. But you decided... It seemed to me, first of all, you moved to spend more time here. You've always had homes here and in America, but you thought you'd come here and you threw yourself into work. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And it might
be nearer to being near Mabel's great because she's such a powerhouse, my daughter. And always, you know, I'd always come and gone from here. But yeah, so at the moment, there's more to do.
But there's
more people to see and walking around and do it. And I can work and do my shows from here and sell them in America. And it's good to be in production in England. It's really picked up a hell of a lot from when I moved away in the 80s and all that. And my goodness, it's a good place to work.
And you've got, I mean, you're most famous for your ability to impersonate. But it's more than that. I mean, you're... People sometimes can't believe that it's not Angela Merkel, who is my personal favourite. You're Theresa May, you're Angela Merkel, you're Judi Dench, you're Nicola Sturgeon, Jeremy Corbyn now.
Mm, yeah, I had a crack at
who,
that.
Is there anyone you wouldn't do? Oh, obviously.
No, but, you know, I don't. Sometimes I'm not a really, in a way, doing a spot-on impersonation. I just try and inhabit them or try and find out, you know, what they're like. It's the poignancy and the sadness, you know me? I mean, Theresa May, I looked at her she was having a holiday last year with Philip, her, you know, who obviously the love of her life. And I love that she was wearing a dress above the knees. Talking about age, I thought any English woman has got the confidence to show her knees in a summer frock.
And she pulled it off.
Yeah, and it just, that gets to me more than, you know, I don't want to just do surface cruel impersonations. I like the sadness of people or their vulnerabilities. And I have a brilliant makeup artist right now, though. A Dutch guy called Floris Schuller and Vanessa White. They're fantastic. He's a sculptor and artist, and I've worked with some brilliant people like Matthew Mungall in America, but this guy is, for me right now, he's just really genius. I mean, he created the Judi Dench makeup, and he doesn't make a face like Judi Dench and puts it on me. He imagines me as Judi Dench, and he sculpts and does. He's extraordinary, and I've just found this guy to work with.
How long does Judi makeup take?
No, I mean, once they're sculpted and they're done, you know, you have to know how to apply them very quickly. Two people do it because it's a television schedule. I can't be 5 hours in makeup, and that's all a myth now. That makeups take so long. Yeah. You know, they're made of gelatin, and you know, it's not John Hurt doing the Elephant Man 30 years ago. Mm. You know, you can be very swift And if they fit you beautifully, it's like putting on a beautiful pair of handmade shoes. They should be very quick to apply. And the toughest thing is lighting them, making sure that the lighting man doesn't then make it look like a makeup. But they can be done very quickly.
And whose idea was it to portray Dame Judi Dench, National Treasure, as a kleptomaniac, which is just
brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant. Writers Andy Riley and Kevin Cecil came up with that idea. I wanted to be Judi Dench, and then because I love her voice and I can do that voice, and then they're brilliant writers. They really are. I'm so lucky.
How important is the writing?
Everything. It's everything. Absolutely right. Everything. That's like.
And you, but you're part of the writing. You get in a room. Is that when you're happiest in the room? Coming up.
It's the hardest part. Sometimes I think, oh God. And when it starts to work, or you get something brilliant writers like these guys who are just, they make it just, they have the heart of the character and make it real and not just trying to make a sketch or, you know, be corny and do those same old jokes. You know, it's finding the point of view. Is you can all do sketches where you make fun of somebody or it's just over the top. You know, it's finding the, I mean, I wrote the Angela Merkels and I decided that she thinks she's really sexy when she's with all the other guys, because it struck me that she's a woman. She was the only woman in the room 5 years ago, you know, and I decided she'd have a best friend that we can see her with a girl.
Birgit.
So that's, you know, they can talk about fluffy hair and
it's a lipstick.
Looking like a six bomb, even though she just wears beige. And I've no idea what Angela Merkel's like. I don't know if many people do know what Angela Merkel's like, but I do admire her. And
but it's not just the makeup and the writing, because you get I know that you start with the walk, because I've been watching some. It's the walk. It's spot on.
I've noticed that she doesn't use her whole arms to swing when she's walking. She just bends her arm at the elbow when she's walking. And it's a real fascination with studying them. And of course, it's easier now because I've got all these YouTube and all this reference, Claire. Whereas years ago, when I used to do the Tracy Ullman show in the 80s, you know, if I wanted to be like, have someone with a Brooklyn accent, I used to have to call a car showroom in Brooklyn and talk to somebody who sounded real. And now, of course, I have this incredible reference data banks of things. And so it does make my job easier, but I'm always listening to people. But sometimes I don't get it straight away. And then when I do the impersonation again, or I didn't used to impersonate lots of people. I always just used to do original characters. But it's interesting, and it gets a lot of attention if you're promoting a show. I've used Judy. I wrote to her and I said, you know, I'm using your great talent to promote my show. And she's really great. She wrote back to me and she was saying, it's been a bit difficult because people, a manager in Marks and Spencer said to me, I've got my eye on you. I love that. I thought she was going to nick stuff.
Who's your favourite character that you do? Famous pun.
I don't have one. I just always waiting for the next to do the next one. If I had favourite characters, I would have done a show that was a lot easier on me years ago.
Of course.
I just like doing loads of characters. I'm fine. Then I think, oh, I like doing this one. And then I'm like, oh, can I change and do something else? I like discovering a new one. I like taking it all off and sometimes having half an hour at the end of the day. Yeah. And there's some sketch that we wrote that's kind of borderline. You go, is this funny? What is it? And then just suddenly going, we've just got to do it. And Vanessa will say, put this wig on. I go, it's not. Oh, yeah, that's funny. And then I go, oh, yeah, I remember seeing a woman a bit like this, or somebody that talks like this is always a bit stupid, always a bit, you know, strange. And then suddenly a sketch that you didn't think was any good or didn't have much faith in it, it's that nervousness and that fear of trying something. And you go, wow, it worked. And sometimes the reverse happens and it's terrible. But it's the excitement of discovering something new, always.
But you can do, anyone, we were watching the news this morning and the, I've forgotten her surname, Carol, the Scottish weather reporter, forecaster, whatever she is. She came on and you started doing her. Can you do a bit of...
I don't even know I'm doing it.
I'm just doing people's voices.
There's also, I like that girl that talks like that. That's like the regional northern girl.
The business.
But Carol, very careful. You're the weather lady. And she's just so sweet. And everybody goes, oh, there's Carol. Isn't she lovely? Because she's got that wee accent. And she always says things, because it's the British weather, Claire, it's always like, well, starting off quite fresh with sunny spells in the south. And then a dark cloud starts to come over by the mid, and you're like, and then it really could be torrential by tea time. And you go, oh, shit, you know, the weather here is so grim.
It is a bit grim,
she's
isn't
a very
it?
Sort of very precise, blonde, pretty kind of Scottish weather lady. And it's the way she speaks so nicely, you know. But if you did a character on her, what would she really be like? Maybe you get in the makeup room and she's like, put that on, bitch, you know. She's always too nice for me. I don't, I'm a bit wary of Carol.
Now, another character of yours, which is my one of my favourites, is Kay. I think she was one of the first ones. And she's sort of grown with you a bit, hasn't she?
Yeah, I've done that character for years and
Can
years.
You give me a bit of Kay?
Well, Kay was the... She was just that sadness. Yeah, and it was a spinster English lady that worked at a bank when I was a young girl. I used to talk to her on the phone. And she really was, you know, just one of those marvellous English ladies that, looking after mother, probably a virgin, obviously a virgin, would like a cat but can't have one because mother's allergic. And, you know, they break your heart, you know. And then she's, I remember calling her from when I first lived in Los Angeles and to call her at the Midland Bank to check on my account. And I was saying, hello, Kay, because I knew her from British Bank. Hello, Miss Olwen. How's Hollywood?
It just killed me. So she was a real...
Yeah.
She was actually called Kay.
I don't know if she was called Kay, no. Okay, I thought Kay Clark was the most boring name in the world. No, she was just a little bank clerk and she just, you know, I just felt... And she used to have, like, little cats and things on her desk, little china cats. And I always remember one of the girls there said that she kept sanitary towels and things and Kleenex in her desk. She said, and she said, I know she does it so that people go up to her and ask her for things because she's lonely. And it just killed me. You know, stuff like that kills me.
Yeah.
And I can go out in the world and do all this stuff, and there's some people that will never go anywhere, but she was sort of quite happy. Anyway, that sort of thing, just that's what I do it for. I want to be a character actress, Claire. You know, you remember when we grew up, remember Dandy Nichols and Irene Handel and Peggy Ashcroft and, of course, Judy Dench and Maggie Smith. And there's this wonderful... selection of British women who got older and played grandmothers, and there was dignity in aging in their careers. And I think that Eileen Atkins, and they're just wonderful. And
well, you're the next generation.
I wasn't trained or cultured, and I didn't do Shakespeare and work at the Old Vic like them. But
you were at the Royal Court, weren't you?
Yes, I did a lot of theatre when I was younger.
And you did Tony the Shrew.
But I wasn't like a
Rada
kind of central. Right. You know, I've done stuff in my life because I went to America and they let me do Shakespeare, but I'm not that trained sort of thing. But I certainly hope I can, you know, they're my heroes.
With all the awards and accolades, perhaps your greatest achievement in this modern age is that you've gone viral. That from your series with that amazing sketch where you're the policewoman.
That was astonishing.
You were surprised about that?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking tens of millions of people.
I mean, that's social media. That's, it came at a time with this Me Too movement and the sexual harassment. And then, a girl called Gemma Arrowsmith wrote that sketch. And it's about a man coming to a police station, if you want to look it up. It's called What Were You Wearing? This man comes, and I'm a female policewoman. I don't like Danny Boyle for some reason, if you know what Danny Boyle looks like as that day. And that was one of those last minute of the, you know, sketch at the end of the day. What should we wear? Quick, put that wig on. And and he says to me that he'd been mugged. And I go, what were you wearing? He goes, what do you mean? What was I wearing? I said, well, I could be very provocative. So it was like double standards, just like a woman reporting a rape kind of connotations. Yeah. And then I remember that went out. And then I remember the guy from the BBC, my producer, called me and said, oh, we've had 16 million hits so far on that. 16 million? I said, what, 16,000? He went, no, it's 16 million. And the next thing I knew, it was 31 million. It's been passed around all these women's organisations around the world.
It's always popping up on Facebook.
It's incredible, and it's used in university lectures. But that's the impact you have. It's a brilliant sketch. All credit to Gemma Arrowsmith. And it really resonated.
And do the things that you think are hilarious, they're not necessarily going to be considered hilarious
for
other people.
And I don't do things because I think it's hilarious. I love that, you know, some things are sad I do on my shows, and, you know, some things are meaningful, and, you know.
And you start work again, we're speaking now in early February, and April, I think, you go back into the writing room for your next series.
Well, we're writing now.
Oh, you are?
It takes us a long time to sort of set it all up. But now I'm doing a more immediate format, which is great fun. Because I always used to shoot shows and they'd go out 6 months later. And then with everything so fast in the world now, as you know, it's like a news cycle is 36 minutes, you know. I couldn't do an Angela Merkel piece or a Theresa May piece and put it out 6 months later. So what we do now is that we'll do three shows, which is what we're doing now, and we'll shoot for 2 weeks and try and do stuff that's going to resonate for a while. And then we go in for three consecutive weeks where we write on the Friday and then the Monday. Then we'll shoot on the Tuesday, Wednesday, and then it on the Thursday as well if we have to. And then it goes out on the Friday. So it's really current. And that's been so much fun. That's like doing my own little Saturday Night Live. I love it. And the writers love it. You just throw all the newspapers on a table and we go, right, what's going to be? Let's get this stuff out on Friday night. So that's... I've never worked like that before. I love it. It's just great. Listen, I'm still doing it and I'm still impersonating people around me of my age. And I'm 58 and I feel great. And I just feel I'm relevant. It's relevant. And I could, this format I've always loved. And I can still do it. I could do it if I've got strength and sanity. But I'm 70, you know. It's just an interesting format to me.
And I was deeply moved. Having known Alan, that your shows are still presented by Alan McEwan.
That's my company, of course, Alan McEwan. Yeah. I'm now the chairwoman.
But you're doing everything. But you're doing it all now.
Well, he gave me that ability. I'm very lucky I was married to a man for 30 years who, you know, owned the shows, distributed the shows, deficit financed the shows, and really showed me how to have more control in my career than just, you know, being an actress who... got rung up to do a job, and he really protected me and gave me an incredible environment to work.
But you don't mind doing that side, the business side?
I've just learned how to do it. I've learned how to, you know, I know all the connections he made with people who... I just... Now I love it. It gives you more control and, you know, you make more money doing it and you get to do what you want to do. I love it. I like producing and... But he always did it well and he always was good to everyone. You knew my husband.
Yeah,
made sure it was a good work environment, you know. And you know, you have to have a good time doing it. You have to get it done. But you have to have a good time and no egos and no cruelty and pecking orders and all that crap. It's got to be a good experience and that's when it really works well. And I'm having a good experience now. I work for wonderful people. Met some great people in England, Caroline Norris and... Dominic Brigstock, brilliant director. You know, he did all the Alan Partridge shows. And
who makes you laugh?
Steve Coogan, Alan Partridge, is still just perennial. It's just brilliant. Dave Chappelle. Mm. I adore Dave Chappelle. Makes me laugh because there's something vulnerable about him. And I met him at the Emmys last year. I was so excited. He really makes me laugh. I really admire Tina Fey and Amy Poehler for producing and consistently and just making women really... You know, what they did from Saturday Night Live and gone on to do. Women aren't like inferior to the men and, you know, the B team, and they really made a big change in
Women are very much to the fore at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on the sexual harassment that's been going on?
Yeah, I'm so glad it is a watershed moment, that term, don't you think? Thank goodness. You know, we can all talk about it a bit more. I never really experienced anything horrific in my career, but there's been bits and bobs and moments, and because I've been in it a long time, and you think, yeah, that was rough. And oh, that guy used to, like, that director used to, like, you know, flirt with me a lot more than I ever wanted, you know, all that stuff. And yeah, it's bloody awful, but it's in every business. Mm. And I just hope that good guys don't get, the nice men don't get, you know, there's not too many fake cases or, you know, it gets out of hand or people get hysterical and then that'll spoil it for us all. You've got to keep it in proportion. And yeah, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
I think it's a relief.
It is a relief that people are talking about it and that there's a shift in thinking. And I think it is going to result in a change in how men treat women. And that's a good thing. It can only be a good thing for our daughters. Now, 4 years on from losing your beloved Alan, you finally found love again with Oscar.
Yeah, I've adopted this dog who you've been there.
He's just perfect, isn't he? You've always
been
a great dog.
Yeah.
He's a great dog.
Yeah, dogs are fantastic. Yeah. But it's not a lesser love, you know, dogs. They're really special things, creatures on this earth. They're one of the best things we produce on this planet. You know, we got together, Oscar and me, last year. He'd been with some old fella who died. So we were both bereaved, Claire, and we both liked toast and roast chicken. So there was a starting point. No, I just, he's very important to me. But you've known me a long time.
Uh-huh.
We've You've seen all my dogs come and go. Yeah. I've seen you never had a dog yourself. Your sister did.
Yeah, but took on a lot of responsibility.
They're very special. The nutty ones.
Great characters.
I've had nutty dogs too, haven't I?
Yeah. Bianca, Millie.
Look at him.
But I think Oscar's my favourite. I do.
Oh,
he's my favourite. He's got a bit of class, I think. He's a lovely demeanour.
They're very important to me, dogs. I know.
And he gets you out, you go walking.
Yeah, I know. He's a bastard around a squirrel, though. I know. Feel sorry for the squirrels. Yeah. Now, dogs are very important. You're a cat person, you're a dog person. My daughter's a complete cat person. But I just love dogs. Mm. I have great respect for them. But you can't baby them. All this adopting dogs now and the foster dogs. And, you know, I think a lot of people do it to make them feel better. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you could be a horrible person, but you go, I'm so good to my dog. And it's like you've got to let them be dogs as well. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I just have great respect for him because he's...
So this is... You're very inspiring for women of a certain age.
Yeah, I think, you know...
At the top
well, listen,
of your game.
This bloody sexual harassment and women... You know, ageism is a terrible thing for women, especially in Los Angeles, you know. I think you can have... I was talking about being in Paris and European women and having grey hair. You know, you have to... I think we've got to get more women in levels of management, CEOs of companies, and especially in show business, you know, to commission shows and to be in charge of studios and television heads, and you know, and I think that will lead to more work for older. I think this will all be good for women of all ages too. That's what I hope, because it's so ridiculous. The cutoff age, you know, is sometimes 35.
I think there's a shift there too. I do. I think there's
I
a
hope
shift.
So.
Yeah,
I know. Look at the Oscar nominees this year.
Yes,
we've got Meryl and brilliant Frannie McDormand and whoever, and Leslie Manville is who I went to school with, who's a little bit older than me. I mean, it's lots of older women
what
nominated.
What was your favourite film this year?
I really like Phantom Thread. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. I love Meryl, of course, in The Post. You know, The Disaster Artist really made me laugh.
Yeah.
And it was also well done.
I liked Shape of Water and Billboards.
Yeah. Yeah, really admired
a great lot, many, many great films this year.
Yeah,
got,
it was
any
better year.
Film work coming up because you've done movies as well. Some
I love to do them. I love if they offer them to me. Great. It's I think TV at the moment is better than film. A lot of it, especially for women. I always preferred TV. I like films. I've never been in a really successful film. But I'm up for anything, you know.
I work for hire.
I'd love to write one. I mean, to write a 90-minute film, a story that sustains.
Mm. You haven't got time.
It'd be great.
You're too busy. You'd make time. You're very disciplined.
Yeah, so are you.
Oh, look at us. When I miss our tennis.
I know.
We haven't talked about what could have been a tennis
career.
Like
anyone cares listening. But listen, we played tennis, you and me, twice a week.
Yeah, for about 14 years.
And we never let each other down.
No.
And we never got so that one of us was so much better than the other that it was a bore to play. Yeah, but
I was close
at the net. Claire,
thanks,
you're a bugger
friend.
At the net.
That's the best thing anyone's
ever said. I could never
do
a net shot. She'd come up to the net, listeners, with a little, like, almost like a spoon shot. And I'd go, God damn it, she's done it again.
In fact, I think you called me a bitch sometimes. If I did that. Good times. We're playing
again. Yeah, we did. We loved it. We felt we put 5 years on our lives.
Yeah, we did. Here's to many more years.
Yeah, here's to more tennis, Claire.
Lovely to see you. Thank
you.
Thank you for chatting
Oh, my
with me.
Goodness. Well, I hope this thing has been turned on. Honey, you never checked it once.
I did. Look. Oh, that would be funny, wouldn't it?
That'd be hilarious.
Oh, look. There it is.
I doubted her.
Yeah, there we go. Look at that. I said it'd only be 20 minutes and I lied to you. It was 20. Thank you.
Oh, that's lovely to talk to you. Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
We simply must applaud them, the Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham.
It's my mission with the Chat to bring you interesting and inspiring people from all walks of life. I have another strong, independent career woman for you next time, war correspondent Sue Turton. We met 20 years ago when we both worked at ITN and have remained top mates. Sue and I chatted about Brexit, war, Trump and sexism in journalism on her houseboat on the Thames in London before she left for Afghanistan. Sue and Tracy both prefer PG tips, while I am more of an Earl Grey kind of gal. Whatever your favourite brew, why not invite a friend over for a chat and a cuppa? Doctors in the UK are recommending bored and lonely seniors to attend or host coffee mornings rather than take antidepressants. Makes perfect sense to me. Until next time, thanks for listening. Keep calm and chat on.
We simply must applaud them, the chat podcast with Claire Borden. Keep calm and chat on.
The Chat with Claire Fordham is an M Squared production.